Chapter 17. Mustering at Parmenio. There were grand arrivals and there was awe. There were speeches, orders and announcements. Tyros, bowed by war, ecstatic at salvation, reeled with the coming of the Primarch. Two miracles in a single day is more than most human hearts can endure. Once the attempts at pomp were done and the ragged finery of Tyros put away, evening rushed its cool cloth over Parmenio's fevered skin. Then Gilliman found time to speak with his chief officers, the newly minted Primaris Tetrarch of Vespator, Felix, and Captain Sicarius of the Victrix Guard, hero of the Ultramarines. Present also were Maldivar Colquan of the Adeptus Custodes, and Sister Commander Bellas of the Sisters of Silence. There were others who could have been there, many others. The Masters of Battle Group Alphys, Generals of the Astra Militarum, Senior Princeps of the Collegia Titanica, Magos Domini of the Adeptus Mechanicus, and myriad high officers of multiple Imperial Adepta. Most had had their turn at the council called within Tyros's walls. Those that had not could wait. Gilliman needed level heads. Moreover, he needed minds whose sensibilities were uncoloured by religion. Of those upon the wall, only Bellas was devout, but the Primarch trusted her to leave her beliefs to one side. There were too few believers he could call into his confidence. For his platform, Gilliman chose the flat roof of a bastion tower, looking out over the narrow channel between Tyros Island and the Hecatone coast that formed the city's port. The land on both sides had been shorn of natural shape, forced into geometric patterns of squares and rectangles that months of battle could not erase. But the buildings on the altered coastlines were rubble and twists of metal dropped half into the water. Damage like that was costly to put right. Months would come and go before the docks might be rebuilt. Before then, Gilliman had another purpose for them. Hecatone's spaceport was deep in enemy territory. The docklands of Tyros, with their large flat spaces made for the storage of shipping containers, provided a viable alternative. Work commenced to make Tyros's docks ready for the muster. Seaport was remade into spaceport. Gilliman's reclamation crews worked around the clock, clearing the far side of the channel. The land was divided into neat quadrants by winking beacon poles. Cleansing teams and chanting priests walked back and forth over these areas, venting steam and prayer into the warm summer night. They wended their way in and out of sight, disappearing behind bomb-shattered warehouses, re-emerging from crumpled containers, not straying outside the beacons of delineation until the whole of each box was done. The quadrants declared pure were set upon by building-sized construction vehicles, beneath whose dozer blades the land screeched with the protests of metal and the grumbling of ferrocrete rubble being shunted aside. The giant dozers moved slowly, pushing up the detritus of war into embankments around the mustering point. In the quadrants nearest the shore, the rockcrete was planed down entirely, outlines of lost buildings the sole reminders of what had been a thriving port. They were laid bare for minutes only. Each one cleansed and bulldozed soon played host to void ships landing and unloading more construction equipment, prefabricated fortifications, and hardened warriors to set as vanguard garrisons. Over the narrows of the harbour, the collective shouts of veteran regiments running from their dropships piped under the grind of the port's reshaping. The voices came and went, subsumed into the greater noise of vehicles. At perfectly separated intervals, all sound was drowned out by ships' roaring plasma drives boiling the atmosphere. Amid the haulers, troop landers and heavy landers, coffin ships made their teetering descent, always on the verge of toppling, it seemed, like dowagers alighting from unsteady carriages, until, setting tentative pneumatic feet upon the earth, they stopped their wobbling and became giants' fortresses, opened up their gates and prepared to usher out their titanic cargoes. Already, a pair of warhounds strutted back and forth on guard at the edge of the docklands. Gilliman observed the scene with a critical eye. The air was growing purer by the minute. Jet wash, plasma burn, and promethium fumes wafted across the narrows, but the stench of sickness lifted. The harsh smell of man's technology drove it out. He and his officers removed their helms, breathed cautiously of the air, and found Parmenio's breath to be sweetening. All would have been well, were it not for bad tidings that had reached them hours before.
"We have had further astropathic messages from the Macragge system," said Felix. "Heavy Death Guard Legion presence confirmed. Ardium has been reinvaded. McCrag is under attack. The fortress of Hera is besieged. Master Khalgar will deal with it, said the Primarch.
His noble face looked more like a carved thing than ever. Only his lips moved. His expression was stern as stone, his eyes fixed on the progress of the muster as surely as if they were made of glass.
It is a distraction. I have reviewed the messages. The forces landed there may seem numerous, but the balance is of poor quality. My brother is alarmed at our gains. He wishes to divert me from this place. Perhaps we should split our army and send a relief force, said Felix. Or we could recall the other battle groups in Ultramar to McCrag.
I cannot favor your practical, said the Primarch.
We are aware of my brother's plan, this corruption of our realm with his demon clocks and the webs that bind them. McCrag is free of their perniciousness, as you ensured yourself, Felix. We spoil his game, that is all. He makes a goading move.
Gilliman let his gaze rove over the horizon, where fleeing mists were giving up the mountain foothills.
Mortarion is here, said the Primarch, firmly. I will destroy him, and the invasion will fall apart. Marnius Khalgar will hold McCrag. Those are the practicals we shall work to.
The signs of the demon Primarch's presence are all over this world, signed Belas. His soul infects it.
He will attack us, said Sicarius. Soon.
Gilliman's eyes narrowed, shifting his face from one sculpted expression to another.
He withdraws his armies from their assaults on the cities of Parmenio. He will gather his men, march on our position, and throw himself at us. He has not changed. His preference was always for grand maneuver and the contest of resilience that open battle brings. Let him come. I'll happily show him my skill with a blade, said Colquhoun. It may not come to close quarters, said Felix. Our titans and armor will decide this fight. Mortarion's numbers are greater than ours, but his troops are inferior. His warp nexus has been destroyed. The fume of madness is lifting from the minds of the people. Our outer pickets report deserters who have come to their senses and abandoned him. His armadas of tanks are impressive, and I admit the large number of Death Guard here is a cause for concern. Their sum of traitors far outmatch our own Adeptus Astartes, but three demi-legios of the Collegia Titanica are the Lord Regents to command. Mortarion has one demi-legio. Our knights outnumber his 2-1. I have word today that Galatan has arrived in system. Once it reaches orbit, the enemy's fate is sealed. The final pieces are set. We will surely sweep him before us. You are overconfident, said Sicarius.
He didn't look at either Primarch or Tetrarch as he spoke, but stared out at the sickened plains.
Theoreticals of certain victory preclude the formulation of practicals that will counter defeat. I simply state what any man can see. We have the more powerful army. We will beat him, said Felix. My own experience has taught me that certainties cannot be relied on, said Sicarius.
The servants of the warp are unpredictable. Do not judge them by normal standards, signed Belas. Sorcery poisons this world.
Then we are lucky to have you by our side, said Colquhoun. Our victory would be my assessment, said Gilliman. But the theoretical here begs a simple practical, and that makes me suspicious. According to our information, Mortarion cannot win this battle, but though his plays in the theater of open war remain the same as they ever were, he has become devious. He never had any subtlety before he fell, but his strategies in this war, the subversion of the populace, and this reliance on pandemic to circumvent the cleanliness of honest battle, are tricks learned from his new master. I expect surprises. We must be ready for them, and be able to counter. The casualties we will take from his unclean weaponry will be high, whether he folds at the first blow or fights on to the bitter end. Listen to Sicarius. This will not be an easy fight, Tetrarch Felix. It will not, agreed Felix. I do not think it will be, but I have no doubt that we will win.
He rested his hand on the parapet. The wind switched round to the west, bringing with it the smell of more wholesome lands, and driving out the last of the noxious stink of the plains. The hills on the Kelaton side of the sea were a mottling of green and brown, and early evening shadow, clean of disease.
The swamp is retreating, said Felix. Without the warp nexus to sustain it, it will not last long, said Gilliman. Some taints are more persistent than others, but this plague god's sickness waxes and wanes as surely as any normal disease, and will die back now its nourishment is cut off. A fact I am thankful for.
Felix looked out over the seas of sucking mud beyond the port boundary. Though the pools were drying to curdled slime, and the fogs had gone, clinging on only over the most noisome hollows, venturing onto the plains would be a sure death sentence to an unprotected mortal, perhaps even to a space marine.
The traitor has done a lot of damage, said Sicarius. Never did I think to see worse harm inflicted upon Ultramar than that done by High Fleet Behemoth. I am sorry to have been proven wrong. The Emperor made us to be good at breaking worlds. Some of my weaker brothers never rose above this purpose, said Gilliman.
His bitterness left Felix uneasy.
If we dwell on what has been lost here, we will lose for despair. This evil can be reversed, you will see. We shall face Mortarion, and I will kill him for what he has done to Ultramar. Then we shall begin the long work of repair.
Gilliman's mouth set.
What was undone in minutes will take decades to put right, but right it shall be. Now, he said, time runs onwards. We must turn to this other matter, that of the girl. You should kill her, said Colquhoun, bluntly. She is a risk. I cannot do that, and well you know it, said Gilliman. Imagine if I slew the girl that saved a city. These people are in shock. There are those even here who believe my intentions to be impure. Killing a purported saint would prove to them all that my aim is to usurp my father's throne. Matthew's involvement makes this much more difficult, said Sicarius. It is unfortunate, yes, said Gilliman.
The measured way Gilliman said this made his anger clear to all.
He and I shall be discussing this matter closely. I'll drag him out of the cathedral myself if you want, said Colquhoun. Let him preach, said Gilliman. His sermons are good for the city's morale. It is too late to stop him, and I will not make any move that suggests an opinion either way on the veracity of this girl's claims. She is quietly under guard in the fortress, said Felix. I have assigned a security detail. All Primaris Marines, all Mars-born.
He looked sidelong at Sicarius, realizing his tactlessness. The older space marine looked pointedly away.
None with any roots in Ultramar, none whose local connections might sway them. It is for the best, said Gilliman. If this girl is not what she purports to be, she will twist any chink in a warrior's soul into a grievous wound.
Obsidian Knight Ashira Voy waits with her, signed Belas. The girl shall be safe while the attack on Mortarion's army is underway.
Belas paused. Above the peak of her respirator grill, her eyes flicked down, then up.
Afterwards, we must decide what should be done with her.
We must, said Gilliman.
She might be what she says she is, said Belas.
You might be biased by your faith, said Sicarius.
Gilliman glanced at her. He still found the Sisters of Silence's conversion hard to grasp.
My duty is to the Emperor, said Belas.
Many a bad choice has been made in deciding how to perform one's duty, said Sicarius. Many practicals stem from one theoretical. They are not all equally valid. Do not squabble, warned Gilliman.
As you command, I obey, signed Belas. Your word is more dear to me than any other, except that of the Emperor himself. You are his living son.
Do not put your faith in me in that manner,
said Gilliman.
Your belief in my divinity is misplaced. I am not a god, sister, and you will not treat me as one.
Belas bowed her head.
Felix, what is your opinion of our young guest? Said Gilliman. Theoretical. She is, as she says she is, a saint of the Emperor.
Felix rapped his knuckles on the wall as if testing the solidity of his own arguments.
True saints are rare, said Gilliman. As far as my researchers inform me, there have been a handful of genuine saints in a legion of pretenders. History is littered with them, and I am not convinced those deemed real are vessels for the Emperor's will. Then what are they? Asked Colquhoun. My brother Magnus could have answered that before he erred, said Gilliman. Although I accept what I once regarded as superstitions as occulted fact, my grasp of the esoteric is limited. My guess is that they are a type of psyker, whose empowerment is stabilized by their faith in the Emperor. The Sisters of Battle manifest psychic effects when sorely pressed, and these are brought on by their faith. It may be a saint is merely an extreme example of this phenomenon.
Belas, the only one who might have disagreed with this reductionism, signed nothing.
One day, perhaps, I will have time to turn my mind to the matter, continued Gilliman. Some of these saints are at least sincere, whatever the provenance of their ability. They can be powerful allies. Saint Celestine, said Sicarius, she proved her worth to you? She is an asset to the Imperium, agreed Gilliman. Many psychers are, but the numbers of those who are a risk dwarf those that are not. Further theoreticals, said Felix. She is, as my lord suggests, a psyker of noble spirit. Or she is a deception, a tool of the change god, perhaps, set up to foil your brother Mortarian's aims here. Magnus and Mortarian's so-called deities are opposed. In either case, she is dangerous. She is dangerous under every circumstance, said Gilliman. If not physically, then politically.
He narrowed his eyes.
Could Magnus's hand be in this? Scheming was more his preference than Mortarian's, but he was rarely this obtuse. He enjoyed displaying his intellect, although the god he follows is another matter. Do we care? If they are at odds, we should be pleased. It is so much better when the foe kill each other, said Colquhoun. It does not make them our allies, even if Mortarian and Magnus fight to the death, said Gilliman. What is the current status of the girl, Belas?
The girl's abilities are subdued by hexagrammatic chains. She is blanked by obsidian night voy. If she were a vessel of the Emperor's will, neither of these things would affect her.
Magnus could defy those things, said Gilliman. If she is the instrument of my brother or some other agency, she may be shamming. You must be careful. You cannot rely on your arts to block his power.
So the legends suggest, she signed, her fingers flickering.
They are not legends. Magnus is more powerful than ever he was in the days of enlightenment, said Gilliman. I have witnessed his ability. Beware of this girl.
At the first sign of impurity, I will see her dead, signed Belas.
See that you do, said Gilliman. Until then, tread warily. Tyros loves its so-called saint. I cannot afford to have my people turn against me through rash decisions. Both my brothers know this. I will move soon, before Mortarian is ready.
He lapsed into silence. A giant coffin ship came growling overhead, its grav-impellers thumping in preparation to take the load from the void engines. They watched it land, and the doors open. Sirens wailed as the loading bed extended, the hunched form of the Reaver upon it shaking as it was pushed out into the world. When the noise had died, the Primarch looked to the sky, where the first stars blinked in competition with the lights of the fleet, and spoke again.
We await Galatan's approach. When it is near, then we attack.